We live in a world full of competing ideas, narratives, and worldviews. And that's true whether we're talking about the news, our politically polarized culture, and the world of entertainment. Hey everyone, Adam Holtz here, your host of The Plugged In Show, focused on the family's weekly conversation about entertainment, pop culture, and technology. Thanks so much for joining us. At Plugged In, we spend a lot of time detailing the content you can expect to find in any given movie or show or song or video game. And we do that to give you and your family the information you need to make the best decisions possible about the entertainment that you choose to engage in. We understand that that's really one of the most important things that we do at Plugged In. But I think all of us on the team would also say that our heartbeat is to push deeper than that into the realm of ideas, convictions, and beliefs that we see woven into the entertainment all around us. We want to help you and your family grow in your ability to identify and grapple with those deeper themes and worldviews. And those themes ultimately have to do with what we believe. So in our first segment today, we're going to unpack that conversation a bit. And not coincidentally, it's a conversation that we also have in our new plugged-in book, Becoming a Screen Savvy Family, which you'll find more information about in the episode notes for today's show. And before we jump in, I want to remind you that The Plugged In Show is a production of Focus on the Family. We're a donor-supported ministry. We hope our conversations each week encourage and equip you and your family in the areas of entertainment and technology. And if we have helped you, we would invite you to consider supporting The Plugged In Show with a donation. And you'll find information on how to do that in the episode notes for today's show. So with no further ado, let's get started. Joining me for our first segment today are Kennedy Unthank, Paul Acey, and Jonathan McKee. Hey, guys.
Hello.
Hello.
Hey. Well, for our icebreaker this week, I want to hear about a movie that you saw more than once in a theater. What made you want to experience it again on the big screen? Jonathan, I see that hand. Oh.
Well, I mean, this is some serious hours of commitment here. But on the release of Titanic, my buddies and I had all really been anticipating it. We were kind of James Cameron fans. And when we saw that it was coming, we literally had tickets for the morning. And we went.
The morning of Titanic?
You know, yeah, literally tickets to see it that morning. The morning of Titanic. And watched it. All, you know, 18 hours of the movie. And then when we finished, like the buzz started to go around that day because immediately people, I mean, you guys might remember, just buzz was going around about how great it was and stuff. And so a bunch of friends at church were all like, hey, we're bringing the wives tonight. We're going to Titanic. And my wife's like, I gotta go, gotta go. And we're like, okay. So literally like 4 hours later, I went and I watched it again.
Man.
I saw a lot of Titanic that day. And I can tell you honestly, that I literally was not bored during a minute of it.
And for exactly those reasons, I skipped it until it was re-released a couple years ago and I was finally forced to watch it for Plugged In.
That's a lot of Titanic. Let me just point out that I think Jonathan gets extra points because he talked about Titanic during the icebreaker.
Oh, that's good.
Wow.
Wow
is right. I think we can just wrap this show right here. Yeah. Paul, what about you?
Three dads just laughed.
Right? Exactly.
So, you know, this is a tricky question because...
It's not really.
Oh, well, it is for me because I don't see a lot of movies for fun. I see a lot of movies to write about them.
Right.
So the only time I really go to a movie is, you know, just for fun, is if I think, oh, that's something my wife would like.
Okay. I was going to say, did you have a childhood?
I did have a childhood. And I can tell you. So I could tell you all about Fellowship of the Rings.
Right.
Right. I went to that. That would have been my Titanic. Like, as soon as I saw that movie, I would have said, that Balrog, those creepy ring wraiths, I am definitely going to go back tomorrow night. So, yeah, that's what I did. But I think...
But that's not your answer.
But that's not my answer because I always have to give more than one.
Well, I prompted you, so, you know, it's on me a little bit.
You know, I'd have to say Avengers Endgame.
Yeah?
Yeah, yeah, because that was a movie that not only did I need to see to review it, but I needed to see again with my wife, and then I kind of needed to see it again just because I cried much during the other
two. He's actually the reason why they
really
did so well at the box office.
Okay, good. Paul did not really cry. Yeah, thank you, Paul.
Exactly. It was just I was handing the box office all my money, and that's why it made $3 bazillion.
Exactly. Yeah, well, I guess I'll go next on that.
Yeah, no, I was actually looking for a witty comeback, but it was not to be found. So, Kennedy?
Yeah, I'm actually in a similar boat to Paul in that I don't normally go see movies more than once unless it is because I saw it for work and then my friends wanted to go see it. However, I did go see Spider-Man No Way Home a second time, specifically because I went to see it with my friends in Florida. And then I got to, back then, Olivia and I were not married yet. So when I went to visit her, their family hadn't seen it. So we all went out and we watched it again. And it was actually quite fun the second time, too, because now I could see all these like all these callbacks that I didn't recognize the first time through.
Well, and the movie goes so fast, right, that I think that watching it again can really help. I think that I would want to watch Tenet again another time just so I could figure out what
was
going on.
If you could turn the volume down.
Paul, I've seen it like four times. You're not going to figure it out.
Still don't understand it.
Yeah. It still
I wonder if
makes
I would fall asleep
no
again in the middle
sense.
Of it. That'd be interesting.
No matter how many times you watch it, you're never going to figure
it's
out
not a
what
Terrence
the
Malick
army
movie.
Is that he's fighting at the end. Who are they?
Who are they? What's going on?
Yeah. Well, I'm going to go with The Matrix. And my Matrix story, which harkens back to 1999, we just celebrated actually the 25th anniversary of The Matrix release, which makes me feel insanely old. Actually, there was another movie that came out the same week. Thank you, Kennedy.
Makes me feel 25 years old.
This week, we're going to talk about movies the year Kennedy was born. So there was another movie that came out the same week called The 13th Floor, which nobody remembers. And they're similar premise-wise. I thought that I was going to see The 13th Floor. And so I got into The Matrix, and it's like, what is this? And apart from probably Star Wars, I don't ever remember having an experience in the theater like I had with The Matrix. It's the only movie in my life that I left the theater and I immediately went to the box office and bought a ticket for the next screening. And that was the second of 11 times that I saw it in the theater.
That day?
Wow.
No, over the next few weeks. Day. Thank you for clarifying.
Can you even watch that mathematically?
No, mathematically impossible to see it 11 times.
I don't know.
And, you know, it's going to tie into what we talk about today with the theme of belief, because what I was so intrigued with was not necessarily the action, which was still amazing and groundbreaking at that point. You know, they were doing things visually that nobody had ever done before. But the interplay of the conversation between predestination and free will. And I just kept seeing ways that they were playing with that idea. And it was incredibly intriguing to me. So I'm going to push the pause button on this part of the conversation because we'll come back to this idea of beliefs and how our entertainment can shape what we believe. But I wanted to say, if you're listening to the Plugged In Show today, what's a movie that you saw more than once in the theater? You can let us know at team@thepluggedinshow.com. And, you know, if there are just other things you want to tell us, we would love to hear those too. So shoot us an email. We want to hear from you. All right, so let's dive into this big question that we talk about in the book. And I'm actually really excited for today's conversation because I think there's so much to say here. But the question is, how does entertainment shape and influence what we believe? That's sort of the overarching question for our segment. And at Plugged In, we often talk about how our entertainment choices can affect somebody's behavior. But the stories that we encounter there can actually affect us at that deeper level, on the level of belief. And in the book, Paul and Kennedy, you both wrote about themes related to how entertainment can shape our beliefs. So how would you, and Jonathan, feel free to jump in here too, how would you say that the stories that we encounter really can shape or influence our deepest convictions?
It's a huge question.
Thank
right?
you.
It's a,
that's why I asked it.
I think that really we are geared to learn by story.
Okay.
Right?
Say more about that.
We are creatures of story. You know, we learn from our own experiences. We learn from the experiences of others. All those experiences make our story,
Yeah.
Right? They build our story bit by bit, moment by moment. And so naturally, when we turn our attention to the stories that we tell ourselves in the media, you know, the books, the movies, the TV shows, even the music and video games we deal with, you know, those become really powerful conduits for learning and for growing and for changing and maybe even corrupting. It can be, they are just so powerful to how God wired us to be.
Yeah, I mean, and it's probably no coincidence that one of Jesus' most effective methods of communication was through the story.
Yeah, and I'm really thinking about what Tolkien said, kind of on the topic, as I typically am.
and that's why we have you here, and now Tolkien.
Tolkien, when he was discussing creating Lord of the Rings, he talks about how it was at first unconsciously a Catholic work. And then he says later he realized it, and then it became a consciously a Catholic work. And so I don't think we should, you know, ignore the fact as well that authors bring their own beliefs into their stories, whether they realize it or not. And so a lot of those beliefs the audience will still pick up on too. And they'll see those beliefs and they'll grapple with them. And especially if they're an emotionally driven plot, it's really easy to get sucked up in it and be like, oh, even if the protagonist isn't that good of a guy. And
right.
I'm no longer talking about Lord of the Rings at this point because they're all pretty decent.
Yeah, they're all.
But
except for Sauron, not a good
but
guy.
But a lot of times, you know, I'll be sitting here, I'll be like, if this was real life, I don't know if I'd support this guy. But because he's the protagonist, now I'm like, okay, I'm kind of on his side.
Yeah, well, and you just think about the creative choices that the directors, that storytellers make. They influence us so much that they really become kind of a part of our lives. And by that, I mean, you know, how many times have we looked around and we said, oh, man, that moment was just like a movie. That felt like it could have been a scene from a movie. I remember finishing a marathon in Disney World. And it was...
Again with the marathon in Disney World?
The marathon in Disney World. It was a rainy day. It was 26 miles in. We were just finishing
it up. This feels like it could be a long story.
I'll make it quick. but you know, Disney, because they are masters of storytelling, right? They had all this music going, thumping through this whole pathway that you were running. And it was raining and they had these fire pits going. And it was just, it felt like I was the hero of a movie. It was the most amazing, one of the most amazing experiences ever. But it was all because of the manipulation and the power of narrative that Disney brought to the party. And a little bit of rain, too.
And a little bit of rain, too. Well, it's interesting, as I listen to you guys talk about this idea of how entertainment can shape our beliefs, I've heard a couple of different things. But one of the themes that pops up here is emotion. Right? I mean, how do these stories work on us emotionally in such a way that we actually might be tempted to walk out of a movie with a different conviction on something, whether we realize it or not, because of how that emotional element has worked? Jonathan?
Well, you think of historically how things influence us. Many of us, you know, we've seen maybe in our own lives or in even our kids' lives, we've seen how a friend can really influence, you know, young people, right? The more you hang out with someone, all of a sudden you start talking like them, acting like them, picking up maybe their good and their bad habits. Same can be of a mentor. One of my kids had a teacher who is an atheist who, and sadly the teacher lost their spouse, and that year was just pretty much daily preaching about, you know, what a terrible, conniving puppeteer God must be to do this. And my child was very affected by that, very affected, because this was a hero in my child's life. And you know, that cool teacher, whatever, but yet this tragedy happened, and I just literally saw anger in my child from that year. And so it's interesting when you see that happen, and what's happened in today's world where we carry around our mentors in our back pocket is we develop relationships with these people. We get to know these people. And sometimes it's in a fun way. I mean, like I you know, love fixer-upper shows. So, you know, Fixer Fabulous, I feel like I know Jenny and Dave, right? Hometown. I feel like I know Ben and Aaron. And sometimes, like, Ben will be talking, I'm like, oh, you know, Ben and I could be best friends, you know, because you get to know these people. You're hanging out with them a lot. Social media is doing that because these influencers become, like, kind of part of our lives. And yeah. almost, it seems like that friend. And we'd be fools to not realize the incredible influence that these influencer friends can have on us.
Yeah, and in particular, I think this is really true. The younger the viewer is, you know, you still have your developing brain. You still have your you haven't had as much experience in deducing truth from just story. You have all these elements that are combined together in a very emotional story that is oftentimes emotionally manipulative intentionally so that you really connect with the characters.
Yeah.
And to be clear, I'm not saying that we have to become stoic. We can't have any emotions whatsoever. But it's much harder to deduce the truth from the emotion, from just the purely emotion side of things. When you don't have as much experience. And to Jonathan's point on the parasocial relationships where we, especially with like YouTube and Twitch and TikTok, where you develop this relationship with someone who does not know who you are, but you have watched so much of their content that you kind of feel like, oh, you'd probably be friends if you met up with them right. one day, you know? Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, after developing that relationship for 2-3 years, however long they make this content, suddenly they tell you what their political views are or what their religion is or something like that, or they have a topic that might be a little controversial and they just want to talk about it, and you're thinking, well, I like them,
right?
So maybe I agree with that.
Yeah, I think Kennedy hit on a huge point, and that is the relationship component to it. You know, that's one of the most powerful part of stories is that it allows us to meet people that we wouldn't otherwise meet, quote unquote, meet these people, right? Because you're right, we don't actually know them, but when we learn their stories, it feels like we do. We feel like we would really like them, as you say, Kennedy. And that can have a huge impact on just how we perceive not only those people, but the issues that they represent. You know,
absolutely.
One of the things that I talk about in the chapter that we're sort of focusing on is just that issue of LGBT issues, right? We have seen a lot of LGBT characters in the media that we're around a lot. And it has done a huge amount of public opinion swaying.
Yes.
Because it has allowed people who might not have met anybody who's part of the LGBT community in real life to virtually meet them, and we like them and we embrace them.
Yeah.
And that becomes a huge conduit for a huge change in public opinion, I think.
You know, absolutely. And I want to just riff on that a little bit, that in 1997, Ellen came out as gay as her character on the show, and pretty much simultaneously in real life. And the show was canceled 3 months later. And we were at a point in 1997, which was not that long ago, where culture wasn't ready for that. Well, fast forward to where we are today, and we see that representation all over the place. And I thought it was fascinating. In 2012, he was vice president at that point, but Joe Biden said he felt the show Will and Grace did more to normalize homosexuality and change our culture's opinions about it than any single factor in our culture, for exactly the reasons that you're talking about. All of a sudden, we had these characters that we liked who were really affable and really just likable. I mean, that's the word. It's like, well, if these characters are so likable, how can this thing be something that is problematic?
Yeah, there was a character in a movie that I reviewed a couple of years ago called Bros. A really, really harsh movie. But it had a fascinating line where this guy was telling the main character that half of the kids that he knows have non-binary leanings or whatnot. And the main character said, well, that makes sense. You know, we grew up with AIDS. They grew up with Glee. And that suggests, I think, the power of media.
Yep. So I think there's that likability factor. We've talked about emotion. I think comedy is another genre that is actually maybe more subversive than almost any other kind of entertainment. And what I mean by that is when we're laughing at something, our guard is down,
mm-hmm.
you know, and those ideas, they can go in there. And, you know, let's take, not take an issue like the LGBT issue. Let's just take The Hangover or something like that. You know, these, you know, bro party movies, you see people doing ridiculous things, right? And getting very drunk, making very bad decisions. And it's all for the sake of a hilarious story. But we don't really see usually consequences there.
Yeah.
But if you're watching that as a teenager, you may be internalizing, that looks like fun, you know? And here we're more maybe in behavior than belief. But again, it's that reinforcement of the idea that what I see on screen really can shape how I live my life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and when we're plugged in with, if these are our role models, these are our coaches in life, and think of music. We've had entire podcasts where we talk about the influence of music and how much we're listening to the same stuff over and over again. And I've even commented how my beloved country music turns very often
I'll keep praying for you, Jonathan.
pray for my salvation. But it turns to drinking so often.
Yes.
It's just tiresome of how much it's like, I'm sad, go to a bar, you know,
right.
and in a way it just starts to become preachy. And that's the thing, is there's so many different ways in which we kind of learn subconsciously. I'll bring up literally what the American Psychological Association deemed sexualization of our young girls. That's mm-hmm. another way this has happened. And that was, the American Psychological Association defined it as when young girls are influenced by thinking that how sexy they are or how good looking they are is where their value comes from, more than other characteristics. And we see that all throughout our culture, where, you know, you have to be sexy first. And we've seen it in some of our wonderful singing shows, where, hey, if you're gonna be a singer and you're a girl, you gotta wear, you know, very low, you know, a plunging neckline and show a lot of leg and this kind of stuff. That's sexualization in practice. And sadly, we see our young girls dressing like this because it's the way their role models on TikTok dress. It's the way everyone dresses. So it's just a trickle down, because this is what our influencers are doing. And in essence, this is what culture does.
Yeah. And when you're talking about these issues, yes, they are behavioral issues, but it is also about belief.
And identity too.
And identity. We believe what we see on screen. We believe that what we see on screen is a manifestation of what is cool.
Mm-hmm.
It is a manifestation of what we should be doing with our lives, you know? And when we're 14 years old, I mean, I know that when I was 14, I was nothing close to cool. And none of my friends were, and so I knew what was...
How about
was,
now?
No.
But, the question was just big,
I just
right?
don't
but
care
like,
as
like
much
comparatively
anymore.
Comparatively to your 14-year-old self.
All right, back to your point. I'm sorry.
But when you're talking about when you're 14 years old, you pick up those cues from television, you pick them up from movies, and that determines what you believe in some ways about yourself and even your upbringing.
Yeah. And I think that this conversation about belief is so important, because on one hand, I think that we have a deeply vested interest in the idea that we're aware of how entertainment shapes our beliefs. But I sort of think there's a little bit of the fish in the water metaphor here too, right? Does the fish really know the water around him or her? I mean, it's just the environment that you're in. And there's a certain amount of osmosis. Now we have fish with osmosis. I'm not sure my example is still working, but you understand what I'm saying, that you take in the culture and the environment around you. And to some extent, it can't help but shape some of those core beliefs.
Yeah. And to be completely clear, we are, you know, we're a Christian podcast, and we're not immune to the fact that Christian entertainment can do the same thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't want to rally out any pitchforks and torches against me, but I do want to bring up very briefly the Left Behind series.
Mm.
That really shot this, like, I guess I'll say in quotes, the secret rapture kind of idea. That really brought it into prominence into the mainstream media, to the point for myself growing up, I wasn't even aware that there were other interpretations. I thought that was the interpretation.
That's a great example,
that's
actually.
That's all I grew up with, was Left Behind. And so I'm not saying anything on validity or invalidity of that.
Yeah.
I'm just saying in and of itself, that influence had a big impact on my life growing up because I didn't even know that was just all I saw.
Right.
Well, and when the media becomes our friend, it's like my wife who grew up kind of in a very dysfunctional family, and she befriended, you know, a few Mormon boys, and she loved their families. She was probably attracted to their families more than the boys, because she would go over there and nice families together, family dinners and all these things that she never had. And it started to slowly change her religion, her belief system, because she was buying into all that. And there's a crazy end to the story, and it ends with her not choosing it. But
that's another podcast for another time.
That's a whole other podcast. But it was amazing how much, because of her hanging out with these friends and the influence of them, it started to change her belief system.
So I want to turn it toward sort of a concrete application here for families, because I think this is all hugely important stuff. How do we, and we could talk for an hour about the question I'm going to ask, but we'll keep it shorter than that. How do we help our children learn to identify and think critically about the narratives that are floating out there and these different worldviews that may show up in their entertainment choices? What do you guys think about just what that process looks like?
I could chime in with a short thought that our listeners here who are here with us and have been with us so long have heard us say before, but I think it's worth saying again. And that is, so often I think we as believers sometimes feel that the best thing to do with our kids is to constantly block out the lies. How do we turn this off and shut out this, you know, influence? And I'm not saying, you know, content blockers are bad, but
and eventually sometimes, we become Amish.
and sometimes we're so busy blocking out the lies that we forget that the importance of talking about truth. And I just think that one of the things I did is I think I was so focused on blocking lies that I lost some opportunities of bonding with my kids and hanging out and talking with them and talking about truth more. And the more we teach our kids truth, the more they'll recognize lies. So I think we just need to make it so important to, during our family time, find ways to get plugged into sources of truth, which today there's some great entertainment ways, like watching Chosen together, you know, and that kind of stuff, as well as, you know, actually reading the Bible after dinner. That's what we used to do. We used to crack it open after dinner, and the kids got used to it. And it was funny, my daughter said once, when I opened the Bible, she literally, we finished, and she was like, she goes, you know, whenever you open up and say we're gonna read, I always just think, oh no. She goes, but whenever we do, whenever I'm done, I'm always glad we did.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Kennedy?
Yeah, so I'll give a little sneak peek, actually, into the book.
Yeah.
I talk about the what and the why.
Okay.
And so super influential, especially for really inquisitive youth. A lot of times we talk about the what because we already understand the why. And when I use these, I mean what the issue is versus why it's important.
Okay.
And a lot of times, you know, we just say the what because as the teacher, we already understand the why. But if we don't communicate that why that is behind this what, then our kids are only going to hear the what. They're never going to hear why. And so, for instance, if we're applying that to entertainment, we can say, you know, like, oh, you shouldn't watch that. That's bad. That's the what.
Okay.
But when we talk about why is it bad, your kid's not going to instantly know that, most likely.
That's a great point, Kennedy.
And so you need to communicate that to them. Otherwise, you're just going to most likely come off as some authoritative figure who doesn't have a clue what they're talking about. They just, you've got a bias against it, and you don't have any valid reasons as to why mom and dad never understand. So yeah, that's...
And I think to riff off of that a little bit, it's important to ask those why questions of your kids, too. Why do you think this character does what they do? Why do you think this character believes what they do? Why do we believe differently? And that's a big turnaround point that you often go back to again and again, Adam, is the idea of, okay, so let's look at this piece of entertainment. You sit down, you find that this movie has some worldview issues that are counter to what you are teaching in your family. You know, there's an argument to be made to turn it off, but there's also an argument to be made to watch it and then to talk deeply about it afterwards. Mm-hmm. Because our kids, they are going to be encountering a gazillion different beliefs.
Yep.
And to really prepare them for a world in which they're going to be dealing with all of that, we need to talk about it. We need to sit down and say, why do we believe what we believe? Why do we believe that this is true?
And that's really important too, because eventually, you know, especially if your kid is going to public school or if your kid is leaving the house whatsoever,
right?
they're going to encounter other worldviews. And if all you have been doing is saying the what, like, no, you can't do this, you can't do that, you can't do that, but I won't explain why, then when they encounter those other worldviews and you're not there to say no, only way they're going to say no is if they know why it's wrong.
Yep. I think that's exactly right. And I think it's going to vary from family to family. It can even vary from child to child. And I think there is a progression when our children are very young, we're more in that avoidance stance, right? I remember one time we were going to watch the latest version of Annie, and I was annoyed that there was some profanity in it because my girls were really little at that point. And so we chose not to watch it. And as your kids move into their tween years and then their teen years, I think we do sort of shift from that stance of, you know what, we're not going to watch this because there's some stuff in it that we think is problematic, to we're going to be having those conversations like you're talking about. In the book, we talk about the importance of intentionality and conversation and relationship. And so as we do those things, it's modeling that it's not just, like Kennedy was saying, the sort of mindless legalism, but we're modeling critical and theological engagement and helping our kids learn how to do that.
Yeah, and if you want a concrete example of this working in my life, I distinctly still remember. I don't remember the movie or the plot of it or anything, but I remember that my dad and I were watching a movie together, and at one point, a son gets kicked out of his dad's house. And I think it's because he took a job somewhere that the dad didn't like or something. I don't remember. But the point was that my dad at that moment looked over to me and he said, I want you to know that I will never do that to you. And that stuck with me for the rest of my life, because he was there to talk about why that was wrong with me.
Man, that is a terrific story. And I think I would be hard pressed to add anything to that as we're all tearing up around the table here. Because those stories are powerful, right? And the stories become a part of our story. You know, you actually don't remember what that movie was, but you remember your dad
that moment
being intentional, being engaged, being focused on how you might be interacting with it. And so I think more than anything at Plugged In, what we do with the Plugged In show, what we do on our website, what we talk about in the book, is we really want to encourage and equip you to be engaged in that kind of intentional relationship. And there are going to be times when your kids encounter something in their entertainment that you're like, oh man, I wish that hadn't happened. But if we're cultivating that relationship, we have the ability to talk through it. And I think that in that, we are equipping them and modeling for them, you know, how to do that in their own lives when they're not with us anymore. Thanks, guys. I know we could keep going on this one, but I think it's been a terrific conversation. Thank you. Well, in our second segment today, Kennedy Unthank is going to unpack a show with a lot to unpack. It's on Netflix, and it is called Testament, The Story of Moses. So this feels like a show with tons going on, reading your review, and I want to know what we need to know about Testament, The Story of Moses.
Yeah, so, I mean, it generally follows the account in Exodus about Moses' life from chapter 1, roughly to about chapters 32 to 34.
Okay.
Skipping over a lot of the, and then the Lord said to Moses, you know, do this, make it like that, do that.
Okay.
We kind of skip past that part.
So it's kind of a highlight reel.
Yes, yeah.
Okay.
However, it is developed more as a documentary, and so these creative stories and this retelling of Moses' life is often interspliced with these experts and scholars and otherwise knowledgeable people who give their interpretations or give additional context in order to try and bolster this account. Now, it's important to note that a lot of these scholars are not Christian. They right. are Muslim, or they are Jewish, or they may even be atheists, some of them. And so we get a wide variety of interpretations on the story of Moses, some of which do stick to the biblical narrative. Mm-hmm. Others either take creative liberties or they are from non-biblical accounts.
Okay. So if somebody is thinking about watching this, like all the stuff that doesn't necessarily line up with the biblical account, is that a reason to avoid this? Or do you feel like you could still glean some things that are helpful while maybe weeding some of that other stuff out? What do you think?
I don't think this is something that needs to be avoided.
Okay.
I do think it's something that needs to be approached with an aura of caution, mm-hmm. in that we need to be aware that not everything in this is going to strictly line up with the biblical account. Most of that actually does happen in terms of when an interview is happening.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the majority of the cases where someone will say something and, you know, take it with a grain of salt, pretty much.
Yeah.
But there are some instances when the director took some creative liberties. So you'll need to be aware of those too. For instance, the director sometimes will attribute a quote to someone else saying mm-hmm. it. So like in the account, it might say like, and then Aaron said this, but then in the actual story, they have Moses saying it. Some of those are minor, you know. Mm-hmm. Some of them can be a bit more major when you really think about like the theological ramifications. There's that one point where Moses turns to the whole host of Israel and he says, God needs us. Hmm. And that's, as we know in Christianity, that's not true. Mm-hmm. But these are just kind of things that we have to think through. I found it helpful when I was actually doing the review. I was actually reading through the book of Exodus along with along with the documentary. And if you think that sounds daunting, well, don't worry. Each episode is like an hour and 15 minutes long. And so you can read a few chapters in that time as you watch the show. And so it was really easy for me to see like, okay, this is a creative liberty thing. This is not exactly correct. This isn't here at all.
Okay.
And one last thing I'll say is that, you know, to be completely fair, we don't know the entire life of Moses.
Right.
I mean, if you read the Exodus account, it goes from him being a baby and then in the next section, he's 40 years old.
Okay.
So he did some stuff in between
them, right. you know,
that we just don't know about. And so this is not me saying like, oh, well, it's automatically wrong because it's not written in the Bible. This is just me throwing out a caution of it might not be true. So do not take this portion as true.
You know, it's really interesting, actually, that we're having this conversation after we've had a yeah. long conversation about belief
mm-hmm.
and how we navigate the stories in our culture, right? This feels like a perfect example on what we were just talking about at the end, talking a little bit about the what, the why.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that you actually walked through Exodus as you were reading that, because it seems like this is the type of show that demands a little bit of biblical knowledge yep. so you know what on screen is true and what is not.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
I'm also curious, Kennedy, as you were watching it, was there anything that stood out where you found yourself thinking, wow, I've never thought about this story from that point of view before, or maybe a detail that was historically speculated to be true that just hadn't occurred to you?
There were definitely some of those more smaller details
yeah.
That I had never considered. For instance, one of the experts mentions this, and they take it as true in the creative,
mm-hmm.
I'm just calling it the creative liberty account.
Sure.
Where Moses, when he initially goes to rally all the Israelites together and be like, hey, I'm going to, God has called me to deliver you out of Egypt. One of the experts talks about this Jewish Midrashic text, which is a kind of like a Jewish interpretation
commentary.
Of events, commentary. Yeah.
Yeah.
Where they claim that this woman named Sarah, and not spelled our way, but not mm-hmm. important, has been around since the time of, I believe, Jacob. and she was blessed by Jacob to have a really long life. And so the reason why they trust Moses is because they go to this woman who remembers what God said to the patriarchs. Mm. And because Moses repeats the exact same thing, she says, yeah, this is true. And when I look that up, obviously that account is not in the Bible.
Right.
But her name is in the Bible. Hmm. And it's in a couple of the, you know, genealogies. And mm-hmm. so it was something that I was like, oh, I didn't even think about this woman. And she probably was somewhat important because usually you don't have a female name in a genealogy unless right. they've done something really important. Hmm. And so that was something where I was like, obviously, this may or may not be true, but at the very least, it did point me to the fact that this was something I'd never thought about in the Bible before. Hmm.
Well, I think that's what a good story can do, and especially when you're dealing with a story that relates to Scripture, mm-hmm. we've got to have our discernment hats on, which obviously yours is on, and you can find Kennedy's full review at PluggedIn.com, because we want to think about, well, how does this line up with what Scripture has to say? But I love the way you've unpack the show. One sort of very plugged in question to wrap up our conversation. We've talked about the theology and history yep. And kind of the background. Is there any content stuff that parents need to be aware of? Because obviously Moses's story, it's not yeah. always a PG story.
No, and I think probably the biggest part is, you know, if you're concerned about a bit of on-screen violence,
yeah.
They do show when Moses hits the Egyptian with a rock,
okay.
as described that Moses struck the Egyptian in, I think, chapter 2. Mm-hmm. And you see, you know, you see the wound, and yeah. it's a bit bloody, and it's got a little bit of sinew and stuff, you know.
Yeah.
And then you also see some of the effects of the plagues, like you'll see some dead livestock, you'll see people just break out in these really nasty looking boils. Hmm. And obviously, when you get to the 10th plague and you have the firstborn dying, you see a lot of people just drop and they just collapse and they're dead. Hmm. And then later on, you see kind of like their kind of this creative interpretation of their spirits walking along as they move on to the next life or something. Hmm. So, yeah, probably if you're really squeamish about violence, I'd say that's probably the only other thing you should really be concerned about. But the main thing is that just to be very discerning about the theology.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I appreciate as you worked on this review, you put a ton of time in just doing research, not only on biblical stuff, but some of the other things that yep. the historians talk about. So I appreciate the care with which you have approached this review, and you can find a link to it in the episode notes for today's show. Well, now it's time for a little segment we call Pop Culture Connection. And we are joined by our producer, Ashley. Hey, Ashley.
Hey, Adam.
And Ashley has awesome so questions for us. You know, there's a lot of love here. There's a lot of enthusiasm.
Yes,
and we love when Ashley gets to be invited out from behind the board to join to join the madness of the Plugged
Indeed.
In show.
Yes. Indeed. So she's a ray of light. When,
yes.
when Adam greets me, it's more like, hey Paul.
All right. So Ashley's going to ask us some questions, and our goal, as always, is to give lots of answers.
Not, lots of
not
answers.
Not good answers.
Lots of answers.
Lots of them.
Yes.
Who's all first? Right. Who's your first victim?
Kennedy, I have you up first.
Kennedy. Woo-hoo.
All right.
And we'll see if you answer this correctly or not.
Great.
All right.
Correctly.
Well.
Would you choose Star Wars or Star Trek, and why?
Well, you're going to say I'm wrong, but I'm going to pick Star Wars, mainly because I haven't really seen much of Star Trek. In fact, my very first time seeing Star Trek was when Paul gave me the assignment. Anyways, I'm going to start giving you my answer.
Yeah.
Lightsabers, Kit Fisto. We're going to, I mean, that's pretty much it, honestly. But
right?
The Force, midichlorians, the guy who explodes in the pod racing thing where he goes, you know, the Sarlacc pit, that's what I'm talking about.
You know what I'm talking
Kennedy,
about. Kennedy, honestly, I'm not sure. I think midichlorians may be an automatic disqualification as a positive answer.
Look,
here.
I was, to you said quantity, and I was just Star Wars terminology.
I cannot critique that.
Right.
It was a very Jonathan-like answer.
YT-300 freighter. What is that? That's the Millennium Falcon. Who's
nice.
Next?
6 points, though, for Kennedy.
Thanks.
So, yes.
That's good.
So next is Paul.
Mm. Mr. AC.
All right. This is a deep answer, Paul.
Uh-oh. A deep answer. Oh, my goodness.
It's still only 30 seconds, bro. Okay?
Curses.
All right. Who do you consider to be the best author ever, and why?
Oh my goodness. You know what? I'm going to go with Charles Dickens just for kicks, because he wrote Bleak House, which is a great book. He wrote Oliver Twist, which is a very different sort of great book. He could be funny. He could be serious. His descriptions were amazing. He has that really cool goatee beard. Mm-hmm. He wrote, of course, one of the greatest Christmas classics ever in A Christmas Carol. I do think that probably the best Dickens book might be Great Expectations, which of course is great.
Yes.
Stella.
As you would expect.
Nice. Stella.
Nice. 9 points, Paul.
Wow. AC, you are on your game.
There we go.
Good.
Take
that, Kennedy, you did pretty good too, but that was really good.
That was really good.
See the difference between mentioning and not mentioning midichlorians?
I would like to identify the midichlorians and Charles Dickens, actually. It feels like there's an opportunity here.
All right. Adam, how about you go next?
I'm ready. Right. Bring it.
Who do you consider to be the best TV show character from the 70s and why?
Oh, man. Well, it's got to be Steve Austin, the $6 million man, because you know, he was a fantastic test pilot until he crashed horribly week after week after week. Fortunately, they had the technology and they could rebuild him. He had a bionic eye. He could lift an engine with one arm. If you got the toy, you could look through the eye and it was like a magnifying thing. He had this cool rocket ship thing. He had the bionic woman. Lindsay Wagner was a good friend of his later on. There was even a bionic dog. I think there was a jerk eventually.
Max,
nice. Thank you.
Nice.
Thank you.
They should have really called him Chip.
How many?
Nine. Oh. Right up there, Paul.
I'm very upset now.
The brackets just got totally, you know, jangled because there's not a clear winner.
We'll see what Jonathan does.
Yes. Jonathan.
Yes.
Saturday morning as a kid, you get up before anyone else in the house. What cartoon do you choose and why?
Definitely Scooby-Doo. I mean, because you've got a talking dog and nobody really sees he's talking except for Shaggy. They're always eating. You love that. They're always figuring out cases. They always unmask the guy at the end. The guy always says the same thing. I would have got away for it if it wasn't for the meddling kids. There's always some sort of scary element, but at the same time, a funny element. The dog actually talks. Reggie? You know, and then you've got Shaggy who like has this like bonding relationship. So it's about friendship. It's about team. It's about that van with the logo on the side.
The mystery
machine.
It's
all these. Did we run out of time?
We did run out of time.
Okay.
But you blew everybody out of the water as
usual. Oh my goodness.
Yes. 11 points.
That's you, Scoob.
That was awesome.
Don't quit your day
jobs. I was going to be bitter, but that laugh, that Scooby laugh, was pretty awesome.
We'll have to have a contest later.
Okay. Well, I think. Now that we're doing voices and such, that's our cue that we're at the end of this segment. Jonathan, you're the winner again, which, I mean...
Yay, Jonathan!
Man.
Sorry.
I don't know if I suppose.
I felt really good about Paul's and my performance, and also yours, Kennedy. I don't want you to feel left out.
Thanks for the answer.
Midichlorians. All right. Well... As always, we want to say thank you for joining our conversation today. I hope that you have had some really profound connecting points and maybe been able to laugh with us a little bit just now as we have played this game too. And as always, we hope that you have been equipped and challenged in some concrete way to think about your entertainment and technology choices and how those impact your families. So, what did you think about our conversations today? Can you identify any way that entertainment has influenced you? If so, we would love to hear from you. And here's how you can let us know what you think. If you go to thepluggedinshow.com, you can leave us a voicemail. Yes, a voicemail. You can pretend it's a time machine from 1998, the year Kennedy was born. And you can leave us a voicemail with your answers to these questions. And we might just include a snippet of that on a future show, or reach out to us at team@thepluggedinshow.com. And you can always find us on the socials, Facebook and Instagram. This week, we heard from a teen named Benjamin, and he wrote, "Thank you so much for all the hard work your team does. How do you even do it all? I am immensely grateful for your insightful reviews and entertaining podcasts. I'm a teenager, and your reviews have helped me to grow to be more discerning. I admire how thoughtful your reviews are and that you leave it up to families to decide how to watch it. This helps me to think deeply about my media choices and how I can be a better Christian by making wise media choices." And honestly,
nice,
reading that letter, That was pretty much the high point of my week, Benjamin. So thank you so much for taking time to let us know how the Plugged In Show and how Plugged In have impacted you. And we want to hear from more of you, too. So let us know what you think. Well, before we wrap up this week, I want to let you know again that we are incredibly excited about our new book, Becoming a Screen Savvy Family. We've invested a lot of the kinds of conversations that we've been having today and on the show in general in this book, and we would love for you to have a chance to read it yourself. So today, for a gift of any amount to the Plugged In Show, we would love to send you a copy of our book, and you'll find information on how to do that in the episode notes for today's show. Well, thanks again for spending some time with us at the Plugged In Show this week. We know there are a zillion ways you could spend your time. We love having you at the table for our conversations about entertainment and technology every week, and we look forward to joining you again next week for another episode of The Plugged In Show.
It's time to level up. Give your kids a safe, faith-focused, and biblically-based community, and so much more. Join the Adventures in Odyssey Club. Club members get on-demand access to the exciting Adventures in Odyssey series, including more than 900 episodes. With faith-building activities, parental controls, and a safe online community, the Adventures in Odyssey Club could be your best adventure yet. Learn more and start your free trial at adventuresinodyssey.com/radio.